Right. Now, so that is the Haftarah for this Shabbat, for this Shabbat, because this Shabbat will be in Hanukkah. However, the discourse, which was said in 1926, as 1966, on Shabbat Hanukkah, that means December 1966. And in fact, it was said for Parshat Miketz then, but it's the Shabbat of Hanukkah. So it focuses on this verse, Rani v'simch, the beginning, Rani v'simchi bat Zion, sing and rejoice, daughter of Zion. Ki hineni va'ashachanti b'tochech, Na'um Hashem, because I am coming to dwell among you, says God. So now we have the melody of the discourse in order to get us into the mood to understand this beautiful teaching. Ha ye yam ha yam ha yam ha yam. Okay, so here we have the discourse said 1966. And it is not edited by the Rebbe, it's a transcript. Rani v'simchi bat Zion, sing and rejoice, daughter of Zion. Now, umadai chabenu hazaken. Now, Rabbi Shneur Zalman, whose special celebration we just celebrated on the 19th of Kislev, today is the 22nd of Kislev. So we've just celebrated this special festive time when he was released from prison, and that release enabled the Hasidic movement to function in Russia and Poland. So that was a very crucial day. So this Rabbi Shneur Zalman makes the point in Torah Or, in the book of his discourses, which begins a discourse beginning with this same phrase. Why does it say Rani in a double form? Sing and rejoice. It seems to be a double expression. Begam, and also, Lama nekhet Knesset Israel b'shem bat dafka. Why are the Jewish people called a daughter? Right? So, sing and rejoice, daughter of Zion. Now, it might seem to us fairly normal and understandable that she's called the daughter of Zion. Zion means Jerusalem, the temple site, and then you have the daughter of Zion. However, for Rabbi Shneur Zalman, contrasting that with a particular midrash, which we're going to look at in a moment, a teaching of the sages, it's not so straightforward, and it has a profound teaching for us. Midrash, and he cites what's written in the midrash, the teaching of the sages. Mashal le melech. A story of a king. And this king well, it gives in the side a one of the versions of this midrash. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai asked another rabbi, Have you heard what is meant by the phrase "Ba'atara she'itra lo imo," the crown which his mother made for him? So he says, well, there's a story of a king, and he had a daughter, and he loved this daughter very much. He loved her so much that he called her his sister. He loved her even more that he called her his mother. Similarly, at the beginning, God loved the Jewish people and called them his daughter. And he quotes a verse to indicate that, like where the Jewish people are called a daughter. And he then loved them even more till they're called a sister, God's sister, so to speak. And then he quotes another verse where the Jewish people are called the sister. And even more until he calls them his mother. And there's another verse where it's interpreted as mother. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was very pleased about this was very happy to hear this teaching. So there we have the idea that daughter is not the highest level of love in terms of God's love to the Jewish people. It's the lowest level. Umasayim and Rabbi Shneur Zalman ends this discussion, this discourse, Shalatid Lavo, that in the future, it says about the future, the time of Messiah, the time of Mashiach, sing and rejoice, daughter of Zion, that the daughter will come out to be the highest level. And she will be, and then it's interesting, the phrase it uses for the highest level, Eshet Chaya Lateret Bala, the woman of valor, the wife of valor, who is the crown of her husband. And that means that ultimately the greatest love will be expressed to this one called the daughter, and that's the daughter of Zion. So we've got this mysterious idea of several different levels, of which the daughter is the lowest, and yet that lowest turns out to be the highest. Now that's the thrust of the whole discourse, that there are different dimensions in our relationship with God, and what might seem to be the simplest and lowest level of our relationship with God, which is our ability to give tzedakah, to give charity, to do simple practical commandments, and to do good to people, that is in fact the highest virtue. That's something which is even higher than all the spiritual dimensions, such as Torah study or deep meditation and prayer and things like that. Those are all very spiritual, very wonderful, but it's the simplest level of giving charity, like the daughter, that is actually the highest level, and that reaches the highest rewards and the highest achievements. And that's that is the way that we are bringing about the highest revelations of God and the transformation of the world through the coming of Mashiach, through the inner redemption, personal redemption, and the general redemption, is all through this process of using the simplest and lowest, apparently lowest aspect, like in this image from the Midrash, the daughter is the lowest level who actually achieves the highest level. So here is the point where it's being connected to the different dimensions of service of God. So section bet. V'yesh l'kash zeh ma shekatuv pada b'shalom nafshi mikhafni. God redeemed in peace my soul from the battle around me. Ki berabim hayu imadi, because there were many who were enemies, but they came to be with me. And in this verse, as which this was the opening verse of the discourse we discussed last week, and also relates to this time of year, because that's the verse Rabbi Schneur Zalman was saying when he was told from Psalms, when he was told that he would be freed on the 19th of Kislev. And so there is also, it also comes up in these discourses. Now, in this verse, I hinted the three aspects of our service of God: Torah, Avodah. Torah means Torah study. Avodah means prayer. Ugmilut chasadim means good deeds, doing good to other people. Staka, being kind. As was explained in the Talmud, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, God said, Kol ha'osek ba'Torah b'gmilat chasadim, anyone who studies Torah and does good deeds and prays with the community, Ma'ale ani alav, I consider it for him as if he's redeemed me and my children from among the nations of the world. Because these three aspects, Torah, Avodah, and Milut Chasadim, good deeds, they are the three aspects of the mother, the sister, and the daughter. So putting them in this way, in this order, Torah is very high, that's the mother. Avodah is prayer, that's the sister. And then the doing of good deeds, that's the daughter. Just as with these three aspects of mother, sister, and daughter, the greatest preciousness is with the lowest one, the daughter. Similarly, with the three aspects of service of God, Torah study, deep prayer, and gemilut chasadim, acts of kindness, the main thing is the gemilut chasadim, the acts of kindness. Because it's known that in general, the mitzvot are called staka, as is also hinted at in the fact that the Jewish people are called tzaddikim, as it says, your people are all tzaddikim, your people are all righteous. They're all righteous people. And that's because they keep the simple mitzvah, which every Jew keeps, as it says by the sages, that even the sinners of Israel are full of mitzvah as a pomegranate is full of seeds. And that's the generosity of the Jew, the kindness of the Jew. Now, so even though tzedakah, giving charity, is just one mitzvah, and apart from it, there are many, many other mitzvot, nonetheless, the name by which the Jewish people are called because of their keeping the mitzvah is tzaddikim, righteous, which includes the word tzedakah, which comes from the word tzedakah. So since all the mitzvot, and so therefore, because all the mitzvot are called staka, so this means that even though there are these three different paths of relationship with God, Torah, which is the central path, prayer, which is the left-hand path, and acts of kindness, which are the right-hand path, nonetheless, the main thing is the right-hand path of acts of kindness, which includes the two other paths of Torah and prayer, because charity, tzedakah, is the generality of all the mitzvah, of all the mitzvah. Okay, so let's just see if we're all on board understanding this. Do we have any comments so far? Rabbi Lou, would you like to add anything?
Not yet.
Okay.
I was actually there that Shabbos. That was the first time I went in from England.
First time you went?
Yeah, when we came to England on Shlichus, Rosh Chodesh Elul, Tov Shin Chof Hei. And my brother got married.
1965.
Yeah, in August, in the beginning of September, 65. And you were not allowed to come in more than once every 2 years, approximately. It could be a year and 10 months, you know, it could be nearly.
To go so that was the tram heights.
The Rebbe made the rule of 2 years, and then he clarified it to his private secretary that if a person came in, let's say, Yitzvak, And then he wanted to come 2 years later for Yitzchak Kislev, which was 2 months fewer than 2 years. That was okay also. But this was only a
Rabbi
year.
Yud, sorry, it's hard to understand you. Can you do anything about your
Yes.
ear?
Yes.
Sorry
Thank you,
about
Laura.
that. Thank you.
Everybody had the same problem, but you are a good enough friend to say it.
Can you hear me better?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Who was not allowed to come? The
it's
rabbi.
Not really relevant to the maimer. I was saying that when I'm from New York, and my wife and I came here as emissaries of the Lubavitcher Rebbe in August 1965, and whereas normally we would have to wait 2 years before visiting New York,
the Rebbe.
In this case, the Rebbe gave a dispensation because my brother was getting married and my father wanted. And the Rebbe said, since your father wants, he wrote, Mikimetz Avicha Reutze, because your father wants you to come, come now. And I came and I was there that Shabbos.
And heard this discourse. Thank you. Right.
I have a question or a...
I don't hear you now. 1 second. I gotta put on my Bluetooth.
Go on, Nora.
One second. Okay, now I hear.
It is really kind of disappointing for me to hear that there are different levels of chesed, or I don't know, there's something very weird when I heard you say that, not just that the daughters are the lowest of, but that the fact that, because I heard even if you do one mitzvah, your gates of heaven are open for you. Just one mitzvah. That's what I had learned. So to hear that there are levels, hierarchy of being a Jew,
Judaism has a lot of different levels. The force of this discourse is saying that it's the simplest level, which is the most powerful. And what you just quoted, that if a person does one mitzvah, it's a tremendous thing, that is an idea which comes out of the teaching that this discourse is part of. You see, before the Hasidic movement began.
But sorry, Tali, sorry to interrupt you. You said lowest. You didn't say simplest. Simple and low are different. I accept simple. I very much accept simple. But you kept saying lowest.
Well, you see, let's just understand how Judaism was understood before the Hasidic movement began. There were great Torah scholars, and these great Torah scholars believed that the most important thing was Torah study. If a person was ignorant, they looked at them in a very, very pejorative way. The only thing you could be a scholar. If you weren't a scholar, you were what was called an ama aretz, an ignorant person, and they very much looked down on the ignorant people. Now, the ignorant people kept lots of mitzvot, but as far as the scholars were concerned, if they're not a scholar, then they're nothing. And that was the hierarchical approach in 18th century Eastern European Judaism. Then came the Hasidic movement, which deconstructed this hierarchical approach and said, every Jew is significant. Every aspect of Jewish life is holy. And it might be a simple, lowly, practical action, but that practical action has infinite significance, even if the person doing it doesn't understand what the Talmud says about it or what the Kabbalah says about it. He does it. Don't ask. That's why I do it. But nonetheless, the fact that the person does it, that's something infinitely powerful. Now, your statement that one mitzvah has tremendous power comes from the Hasidic tradition. And here you're seeing the way in which, within the context of Torah analysis, that tradition is expressing itself, right? So exactly that is the point of this discourse. That a thing that someone might think is lowly, it's lowly because anyone can do it. Whereas in order for it to be high, they thought, you have to be very sophisticated. You have to have an IQ of 180 in order to follow a good Talmud discussion. It's not accessible to ordinary.
And who were they? Who were they when you said, who are these people?
Well, they were the great rabbis, the Vilna Gaon, the Chaim of Volozhin. These were people who thought that before them, the people who thought that Jewish scholarship is the main thing, and anything less than that is pathetic.
So very elite.
It's rather like the Ivy League perspective on life, right? The Ivy League perspective on life. If you're not at an Ivy League university, if you're just at a state university, garnish, you know, forget about it.
Yeah, very elitist. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So let's. Now, section Gimel says, we're going to understand this by looking at the ma'ala of tzedakah, the significance of charity. Because it says in the Talmud, Shalu et Shlomo ben David, they asked King Solomon, the son of David, Ad heichan kocha shel tzedakah, how far does the power of charity reach of tzedakah? Amar lehen, he said, you want to know? Go and see what my father King David wrote in Psalms. Pizan natan le'evyonim. He scattered money for the poor, the evyonim. Now there are a number of different words for poor, as we'll see. Evyon means a very poor person. Tzidkato omedet la'ad. His charity is righteous. His righteousness stands forever. His horn, his glory, will be raised in glory. What this means is, Shama'alat ha-tzedakah, the power of tzedakah, he be'inyana amshacha lemata dafka, is because tzedakah reaches down, down, down. Uchuchol shetia amshacha lemata yoter, the more the flow goes even further down, even more significant is the greatness of that tzedakah, that act of tzedakah. That's also the point. The power of tzedakah is emphasized in this verse. He scattered money to the evyonim. Now, evyonim is a specific word. There are several levels of poverty. In Hebrew, there are several words. There's ani, dal. Each of these words means a poor person. But the lowest level is the word which is evyon. And the way the word evyon is explained in the Talmud, shuta'ev lochol davar. He is longing for everything. He has nothing, so he is longing for everything. Since he has nothing at all, he longs for everything, because if he had something, he wouldn't be longing for that thing. He'd have that thing. So he'd be longing for everything except that. Whereas if, tragically, he has nothing, so he is on the lowest level of poverty. And therefore, Ikar ma'alat ha'tzedaka, the highest level of tzedaka, is giving to the ones who have nothing whatsoever. Kevan sh'al yedei zeh, because through this, the flow of the goodness is to the lowest level. Zeh, and this is also what is written in Hallel, which we'll be saying on Hanukkah, Mekimi me'afadal, me'ashpot yarim evyon. God lifts up from the dust the poor people. And so that's lifting the dal, that's one word for poor, from the afar, from the dust or the earth. Me'ashpot, from the rubbish. Yarim evyon, he lifts up the evyon. So evyon is the lower word for the poor person. So compared with the person who is only dull, he's poor, but not that poor. It says he's lifted up from the dust, but not the rubbish. The rubbish is even lower, and that's the even lower person, the evyon. So that's the power of tzedakah, that there should be a flow to the lowest level of low, who is really on the lowest level, in order that he should be lifted up. So now that can be understood in terms of the sfirot, the divine emanations of the Kabbalah, that one level of poor, dal, which is not so poor, is yesod. So that yesod is, if we count from chesed, kindness, down to yesod, foundation. Foundation is the sixth sphira. Whereas evyon, the lower level of poor, is kingship. And of kingship, it says, that's the seventh sphira, which it doesn't have anything of its own, it only receives from above. And so when the flow goes down to the lowest level, to that level of kingship, then that rises and achieves the highest level. Now, to consider more about this, we're now going to turn to a passage it says in the Zohar. Now, on this...
Excuse me.
Yes.
Where does Sakat feed the Evyon from?
Well, when we're talking about us ourselves giving charity, we're feeding the Evyon from our own wealth.
Sure, but I'm talking in terms of the Sfirot.
Well, in terms of the Sfirot, it flows all the way down. It comes from the infinite to Chochmah, and Chochmah to
Seth. Okay.
Yeah, all the way down.
Okay. Yeah. All the way, it comes from all the way up from outside the Sfirot.
Yes, from beyond. Yes.
From beyond. Okay.
Yeah. Now, it says in the Zohar, what does it mean, Pizah? Looking at this verse, he scattered money to the poor, to the very poor. So the Zohar asks on this word, which I've been translating, scattered money, what does it mean, scattered? Because there's a verse, Yesh mefazer v'nosaf od. Sometimes a person scatters, and as a result of that, gains greatly. As is written in a Hasidic discourse, explaining the idea of Canaan. You see, the land of Canaan is the name of the land of Israel before it was conquered by the Jewish people. And Canaan also means a merchant. So there are various verses which indicate that the Canaan is, or Canaani is a merchant. So there is the merchant who scatters money, silver and gold, taking it out of his possession. In other words, he's investing money. He's investing money in a business deal in order to earn money. His whole idea is that he's going to scatter money in order to gain. So that is the business, so to speak, of the descent of the soul below, that the soul is, so to speak, scattered through its sojourn here in the world, but through that it gains in a tremendous way, through the sifting process that takes place below, that the soul encounters the world and it sifts out the good from the bad, the sacred sparks. And so that is the power of the soul coming down into the world and, so to speak, scattering its energy for the positive effect which is achieved. So that's a point which is made in the Zohar. Now, the thing is, Va'inyan Bazeh, the thing is as follows. The Hine Bazeh Sham Hiksha. It asks the following question there in the Zohar. So why does it say, Yesh Mefaze V'nosaf Od, there's a person who scatters and is added to? Why doesn't it say, instead of in this sort of passive tense, Yesh Mefaze V'yosef Od, a person scatters, sometimes a person scatters, and he adds, so the Yosef, instead of Nosaf, in the passive, it's Yosef in the active, and in the future, with the idea that when you do something positive, you get rewarded in a positive way. Why does it put it in the Nosaf in the past and in the passive? Ela, now here comes a very profound concept. So here we're reading from the Zohar. Hahu ata deshari beimita. That realm where death dwells, hu garim lei, that causes the yit vasef b'chaim dele'ela. That causes that life will be added above. Kolman diyahiv lemiskene. Anyone who gives to a poor person, ita ilana dechai. The tree of life is aroused. Leosafa to add, lahai ilana demota, to the tree of death. And what this means is that through this, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which is the tree of death, because by eating from that tree that brought death into the world, when a person gives money to a poor person, they are bringing the tree of knowledge of good and evil to the tree of life, and it's being absorbed within the tree of life. So that's what it means, nosaf, it's added to. There is some kind of addition. It's not just ordinary increase, it's addition. And through this, and that's what it means, the nosaf od, it's added to. The nun indicates that it's raised up, that instead of it being in a state of falling, it's goes up to a higher level. So we're missing out the brackets, but we'll come back to them in a moment. And this is what it means. Pizah natan le'evyonim, he gave scattered money to the very poor. That means that through this descent down below to the evyonim, to the lowest level of the poor, then comes this addition, this growth with the letter Nun, that there should be an ascent from those things that seem to have fallen. That which is on the lowest level should be transformed to holiness. It's not just that the person giving the charity increases the way you make an investment into a business, let's say, and you gain money. So the businessman has made a lot of money out of giving his investment in that business venture. But it's more than that. The money has gone into something, or the effort has gone into something, which is now transformed into holiness. And through this will be increased life. And the life will be not only in the tree of life, about which it says that if Adam and Eve would have eaten from the tree of life, they would eat and they would live forever. But there should be a transformation of the tree of death, the tree of God, knowledge of good and evil, the tree that brought good, that brought evil, death into the world. That tree will also become transformed, like the concept we have in the Talmud of deliberate sins becoming positive merits. So it says in the Talmud, and we often quote this, that repentance can change a deliberate sin. One stage is it becomes an accidental sin, and that's a very positive thing. But there's an even higher stage that it, through repentance, it can be changed into a positive merit. And the difference between the two is, according to the Talmud, repentance from fear or repentance from love. So repentance from love causes a transformation of the deliberate sin into a positive merit, that even the deliberate sins, which are the opposite of holiness, they come from the tree of death, they should be transformed into merits, into the holiness of the tree of life. And similarly, we have also the idea that what it says in, he redeemed, what we were learning last week, he redeemed in peace my soul, because the enemies, they turned out to be with me after all. We achieve shepoalim, we have the effect on the enemies, the many enemies, that they become on my side. And that's also what it says in another verse, his enemies make peace with him. And going back to the image of the Garden of Eden, the enemies refer to the snake, which is the evil desire. And so it's through the snake and the evil desire that there are sins and death in the world. Nonetheless, ultimately, that will make peace with him. And the word shalom, peace, is from the word wholeness, shlemut. And that means that it's being transformed to holiness. As it says, you should love God b'chol levavecha, with all your heart. And the Talmud asks, why does it use this strange word for heart? The word for heart normally is lev. And if you want to say your heart, you say libecha. Why does it say levavecha, which is a kind of double term? And the Talmud explains, it means the double heart. One heart is the good desire, and the other heart is the bad desire. And what it's telling us in this verse is that we should be able to love God with both our good and our bad desire, that our bad desire should also love God and be positive, that the evil desire is transformed into good. And so, therefore, the evil desire, line 13, is able to help complete the effort to make for Hashem a dwelling in this world. So there we have a number of different images about the negative becoming positive. And by transforming, we are able to transform the negative into the positive. And we've seen a whole variety of images from Talmudic thought and so on. Now, there's a section that we missed out, which has to do with Ashrei. Ashrei is a psalm, Psalm 145, that in the Jewish prayer service is said several times a day. It's said twice in the morning service and once in the afternoon service. And Ashrei is an alphabetical sum. The only thing is one letter is missing from the alphabet, and that's the letter Nun. And so the question is, why is the letter Nun missed out? So the Talmud explains, because the letter Nun stands for the verse Nafla lo tosifkum betulat Yisrael, the Virgin of Israel, that means the Jewish people or the divine presence, has fallen and it cannot stand up. So this word Nafla, it fell, begins with a Nun. But nonetheless, the next verse that King David wrote in the psalm, the next verse, which begins with Samach, missing out the letter Nun, but it says, Samech Hashem l'chol ha'noflim, God supports all those that have fallen. So in other words, the letter Nun is missing, but it's recaptured, it's transformed in the next verse, where God supports all those who fall. So there we have the idea that there are various negative things, and all those negative things are being transformed into something positive. So let's just see if there's any comment anywhere.
Ali, can you give us an example of how evil is turned into good?
Rabbi Lou, would you like to give an example of evil being turned into good? We can't hear you at all. Can't hear.
How do you know what I asked?
Now we can hear.
One second. It means it's not my Bluetooth here.
We can hear you now.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Now, no.
Fantastic. What? Not well, but you hear me.
Yeah.
No. So I scream. It happens every day.
Rabbi Lou. It's not clear. Yes. You were clear before, and then again, now you're not clear.
One second.
Yeah, now you're good.
Am I clear now?
Keep talking.
Yeah. Laura, take your head.
Yeah, more or less.
Kind of. Not so well. But go on, please. Sorry.
I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah, that's good.
I need a new phone.
You're fine. Now it's fine.
You're good. You're good.
One second.
Now it's fine.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
A little button. So one example is every day there are thousands of petty frustrations, even small things, and sometimes big frustrations, especially when it comes to relationships with people or plans that go awry. And it would seem to be that this is a test from God. Will you stay on straight and narrow, doing what you're supposed to do despite what happened to you? Or it's a distraction to stop me from doing what I really should be doing. But in a deeper sense, that distraction and that so-called frustration or failure or unfulfilled expectation can really be an opportunity. And it's possible for a thing to have many negative aspects which remain, but there's something good that we had a pupil that joined, I'm a principal of a school. And because of the unfortunate atmosphere that there is today, she was in a school, in a normal school. And after October the 7th, she couldn't go back, a Jewish girl. And she felt isolated and bad, whatever it was. And she came to our school with her mother. She can't read Hebrew. And we hired for her a teacher during a week or two break, that the legal transfer has to take a couple of weeks. And during that time, a teacher learned with her, and she's now very well settled in the school. So now that's something that's bad, that's evil, and it remains evil. But we have to find, somehow or another, it's not merely a silver lining on the cloud. It's trying to see what good can come out of something. Ideally, it would be that evil people will mend their ways, will somehow or another miraculously change. But if we don't, somewhere along the line, or sometimes you can have two parties. The story with King David was he had certain people who tried to usurp the kingship from him, and they had followers. This is the story that the Talmud talks about. And there were people who were fighting in the other side, but they realized, it dawned on them, that King David was right. And that's the literal case of someone who you think is an enemy becomes a friend. It could be an event in one's life. And really, there's no day that goes by that we don't have frustrations. There's no such thing. Nothing. We just become, now, so we could become numb from it. And sometimes you can say, it's an opportunity. Sometimes you can say, we're having a Shia now, and people are from all over the world. It's because of a very unfortunate, evil illness that was here. And we were forced to use our initiative, our resilience, our resourcefulness. And suddenly there became such a thing called a Zoom Shia. It existed before the technology, but we were forced by the enemy, meaning the virus, to see how we could survive. And from that, it wasn't only surviving, but something good came out of it. The enemy came not just neutralized or coexisting with us, but the enemy became transformed into an opportunity to do something which we never thought about before.
Right. Thank you.
I totally believe in that in every crisis there is an opportunity. But what I heard Rabbi Tali describing was that your own sins become, it's not the outside event, but your own sin with repentance becomes a good deed. That's what baffled me.
Well, you see the effect. The simple way that the Talmud and Hasidic teachings present this, a person did something bad, and now they regret it. And because they regret it, they come to work on themselves. They develop a deeper level of love of God. They become much more careful in that aspect of life, that they're not going to do that bad. They're not going to come anywhere near doing that kind of bad thing. And the whole thing is transformed. The whole force is transformed from negative to positive.
I see. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Now. So section 5. Now, through this service of scattering the money to the very poor, that means we achieve this higher level expressed in this other verse, His righteousness stands forever. His horn is lifted up in glory. Now, here we have the word lo'ad. Tzidkato omedet lo'ad. His righteousness stands forever. But the word for ad, lo'ad, has several different meanings. The simple meaning of the word lo'ad means eternity. Like in the phrase la'ad ula'olme olamim, forever and ever. In addition, we have in a Hasidic source that the word ad has not only this idea of eternity, but also ad po tavo, till here you can come. In other words, till. It's up to here, and it expresses a kind of limit. You can't go further than this, right? So that's a completely different meaning to the word ad. One is eternity, and the other is a kind of expressing a limit. The third meaning is adi v'kishut. Now, adi v'kishut means like an ornament, a beautiful jewel, a beautiful necklace. That could be called adi. Now, in biblical Hebrew. Now, it explains that all these different explanations relate to the highest sphera, the sphera Keter. Keter is crown at the head of the spherot. And so there is the idea of eternity, because the sphera of Keter is higher than the downchaining of worlds, and therefore it's above the limitations of time. So Keter is above that and beyond all limits. The second, and therefore it has this quality of eternity in relation to our world. Secondly, the idea of Ad meaning a border, because Keter is a realm in which there is no way of grasping it with one's mind. And so we are limited as in terms of our understanding of Keter. Even the Sfira Chochmah, wisdom, which is the first of the Sfirot, cannot grasp Keter. It's beyond understanding, and so therefore it's as if there is a barrier which even Chochmah, even wisdom, cannot pass. And that is expressed in the phrase Siag la chokhmah shtika. The border of wisdom is silence. Now, that's sometimes explained to mean that the clever person keeps quiet. That's how, the clever person is thinking inside her or his own mind, whatever they're thinking. But, so the fence around wisdom is silence. But here, it's putting it in a different way. The border which surrounds wisdom is Keter, the crown, because the crown is the level of silence and selflessness, because we cannot understand it. So when we come to that border, we fall silent because we cannot speak. Then finally, we have the idea of an ornament, because Keter, when we use the simple meaning of the word crown, crown is a precious jewel which is on the head of a king. So looking at the word Keter in different ways, its Kabbalistic meaning, its literal Hebrew meaning, these three ways of understanding the word Ad all apply to it. And that's what it means, that through this giving of charity to the lowest level, we reach these different levels of Ad, these different levels of Keter. That means through charity, which means flowing down to the lowest level, to the lowest level of poor, we receive a level, an achievement of going higher in the way of these three different aspects, the way they are in the aspect of Keter. So that means not only the external aspect of Keter, also the inner dimension of Keter. And that's why it says, and then it uses this word keren. Now, keren means a horn, and it's a sort of graphic image that horn is lifted in glory. Through this scattering of charity to the lowest level, one's horn is lifted in glory, so the honor of the person is lifted up. Okay, leaving Michelangelo out of the picture for the moment. So the horn of the person is lifted in glory, but the word keren also means a corner. And the corner, now here comes a very interesting analysis based on a Hasidic analysis of the Zohar. Now, you know the concept of a point, nukuda, the mathematical concept of a point. The point does not have any measurements. You can't measure it. And similarly, the corner, which is where two planes meet. A point is just a single point. Then you have a place where two planes meet, and it makes a corner. Now, that corner doesn't have any measurements, the same way that a point doesn't have any measurement. So that plane, that meeting point does not have any measurement. And so that that means it's the attribute of kingship, which is the sphira, which does not take up any place, so to speak. It's as if the kingship does not have anything of its own, and what flows into it comes from outside. And that what is happening is that the lowest level kingship, which in this sort of code word process is described as being the corner, the level which doesn't have anything, like the point which doesn't have anything, that level of kingship, which is the lowest sphera, is lifted up and exalted to the realm of Keter, so much so that it comes to the inwardness of Keter. And so that means, and that is really what the whole idea, the precious stone, of in the crown of Keter relates also to the story of the 19th of Kislev, the attack on Hasidism, because the attack on Hasidism was the people who were attacking Hasidism were themselves Kabbalists, some of them, the highest of them, the most significant, like the Vilna Gaon. They were Kabbalists. And what did the Vilna Gaon have against Hasidism? He was very concerned that the precious teachings of Kabbalah were being distributed widely to other people and to people who were not great scholars, right? We spoke before about the hierarchy. They were being distributed to all kinds of people. Some of them were high up. And the hierarchy themselves, they were also great scholars, but there were also other people who were studying, and they would make transcripts of these teachings. Someone once found a transcript of subtle Hasidic teachings lying in the gutter. Look at that, he said. These Hasidim, they've got no respect for these sacred teachings. So Rabbi Schneur Zalman came forward to defend this situation. And he gave a parable. And the parable is of a prince who is very ill. And various doctors come. None of them are able to prescribe anything that will be any good. It doesn't help. Finally, a sage comes. He says, I can see what's wrong with this prince. What you need to do is take the jewel, the famous jewel, which is in the crown of the king. Yeah, like here in England, I think we have the Kohinoor diamond, something like that. The famous jewel, which is in the crown of a king, grind that jewel up and make it into a drink, into a potion, and that will heal the prince. So the king didn't want to do this. But the prince was getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Finally, the king said, all right, there's no other course that we can do. Take my crown, take this precious jewel, grind it up, let's try. So they grind up the jewel and they make it into a potion. And now they try to feed it into the mouth of the prince, but he's so weak that much of the water with the diamond sparks inside it dribbles onto the ground. And so Rabbi Shneur Zalman explained, the prince is the Jewish people. The Jewish people is in a state of fainting, of weakness. It's a terrible time. There's been the Khmelnytsky massacres, which were in the 17th century. Now it's the 18th century. There have been terrible problems caused throughout the system of the Jewish people in every way. And so all kinds of economic problems, other problems, and people are falling aside. And so how can we revive the prince? By taking the diamond of Kabbalah, the diamond of the profound teachings of the jewel of the King of Kings, the jewel of the crown of the King of Kings of God, those profound teachings, and somehow make them accessible to the prince. And so grinding them up, which is like saying, you know, transform them in such a way that instead of it being straight Kabbalistic teaching, it's now something that the prince is able to access, and you try to feed it to the prince, and some of it gets spilt on the ground. And that's why this manuscript of Hasidic teaching was found on the ground. So that was his explanation. So that is the image that the discourse refers to when it's explaining. It just says it very briefly. It tells his whole story. Hamashal shel Rabbeinu Hazaken mishchitat ha'aven hayekara shebeket ha'melech. It assumes you know the whole story. And that is the inwardness of Keter. And so therefore, that is how we attain. From the lowest level, we attain the highest. Sing and rejoice, daughter of Zion. Sing and rejoice. It's now, why do we have this double term? The Zohar says, rejoice is in the morning and singing is in the evening. Simcha b'tzavcha u'renana b'ramsha. So singing is in the morning. Sorry, joy is in the morning and singing in the evening. They are the two aspects of the right and the left. And when you say Bat Zion, you're talking about the attribute Malchut, which is on the middle line, and it goes from the lowest level to the very highest level, the very inwardness of Keter. And because of this, there is the love to the daughter, which is what the attribute Malchut is called. And even more than when she is called a sister or when she's called mother, because in the future to come, it will be elevated to become Eshet Chayel Atelet Bala, the woman of valor, the crown of her husband. And more than that, Nekevat to Sovev Geva, the feminine will surround the masculine. It will not only be a crown, which is near the head, it'll also be a surrounding at a distance, but at a greater level. And so it is with the three aspects of Torah study, prayer, and good deeds, which are like the mother, the sister, and the daughter, as mentioned, that the main achievement of greatness is through the good deeds. And that is the flow which goes down lower and lower, coming down to the attribute Malchut, kingship, And through this, one reaches the quality of Keter, the crown, about the idea that it's through our reaching downwards that we rise upwards. And then, now, do we understand this? Are we okay with this? Rabbi Lou, would you like to expand on this in any way? You okay? Right. Okay. Anyone else? Matityahu? Fine. Right. Okay. Eve, anything to comment?
I'm afraid so. I'm sort of still thinking about that question, because if you're thinking in terms of the Birot, all these Birot would have to have the Tzedaka to pour into Malchut, for Malchut to have what Keter had implicitly in the first place, and therefore rise to its level.
So one second. All the Sfirot are pouring something into Malchut.
So, yeah, that would be their Tzedaka, and they would all have to, they all come out of Keter, so they would, and they get more defined. So they'd all have to pour into Malchut, for Malchut to receive that Tzedaka, and fill up with all of that stuff, and therefore be able to rise to the level of Keter.
Right. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it, but that's the only way that would make sense, I thought.
I think that makes very good sense. I think okay. That makes very good sense. We, as an individual person, we are the channel for that flow. And so we enable that flow by the fact that we do a good deed. We do a good deed for someone. We give charity in the physical sense, whatever it is. That is the way we become a channel for that process to take place.
And unless, but when you said that tzedaka is the heart of mitzvot, it's because all mitzvot are a kind of giving.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. All mitzvah can be understood as a form of giving to the physical world. It's giving godliness to the physical world in which we're involved, because the mitzvah is some kind of interaction with the physical world. And so we are taking the ordinariness of physicality and imbuing it with holiness.
So that ultimately we're making the physical world go up there to Keter.
Yes. Yes. And that's that we are revealing the divine potential in the world around us.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Rabbi Lou, that makes sense.
Yeah, you want to add something, Rabbi Lou?
Yeah, which in turn is a deeper manifestation of divinity. And I think that what you were saying about Malchus and Keter, you see, there's a paradox, because Malchut is the lowest Sefirah, but it's also the Keter of the next level of existence. It's the end of one world, but it's the source of the next world. However, yeah. the paradox is that Malchut, being fed from all the previous spheres, has a tremendous desire to rise and not to go down, and not to create the next level of creation. To be drawn up to godliness, to the Keter that from which it comes, it's drawn to it, and that really goes back. And it's not, you know, it's a different topic, but which has to do with the beginning of the whole creation, with Rosh Hashanah. The concept of blowing the shofar has to do with it says that God divided Adam. He was originally Adam and Chava. Adam and Eve were one person, and they were divided in order that there should be able to be a world and reproduction and everything else. And other parts of creation, there was the division between the higher waters and the lower waters in order that there should be able to be something much, much more powerful. And spiritually speaking, it means that when you love someone, you love them deeply in your heart. But that love is proven and is manifest by what you do with your hands and your feet. It's yeah. Going away from the object of that love and coming down. It's taking going down to the poorest, to the evyon, to the one that is needy of everything. Going down to that kind of a level and giving them that brings about a manifestation of godliness in the lowest world, where otherwise he would not be. God is manifest in every single world except this physical one. This is the only world where you have to think and come to the conclusion rather than just right away see it. And that was the whole purpose of creation, that there should be that type of an existence, that malchut, and that should create the lowest where there's a concealment, and to make that concealment become a friend, make that concealment become a vehicle for the revelation of godliness, to be able to find the godliness that's within it. And that's the greatest tzedakah. Every mitzvah, as Rabbi Tali said, every mitzvah is dealing with something physical, which otherwise would look like something which is just nothing. And suddenly it becomes something which is connected to the deepest spirituality and even beyond.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. Right, so the next paragraph speaks about, it's a very beautiful passage that he quotes from Maimonides. It's through tzedakah that we have this ascent of malchut, of kinship. And even though essentially that will really take place in the future, it's actually achieved by our activities now. And in this, there's a special quality about the mitzvah of charity, literally, because it says about that, it's one of the mitzvot that a person eats the fruit of it in this world, and the principle remains for the world to come. And Maimonides, the Rambam, writes about this in his commentary on the Mishnah. Right? That's a quote. It's in the morning prayer, said every day, from the Mishnah in Peah, the section about leaving a corner of the field for the poor. And the Rambam, in his commentary on the Mishnah, he writes that when a person does mitzvot, which relates to the benefits of human beings with each other, that they are helping each other, they are giving to each other, and all of them are included in the concept of gmilut chasadim, kind deeds to each other. This is considered for him charity in the world to come, because he has done a command of God, and also he will achieve goodness in this world, because he's conducted himself in a good way in relation to other people. So because these mitzvah, they've got a double quality, good for heaven and good for other people around one. And so since this is the quality of tzedakah, so therefore we understand that it's through this that we achieve the elevation of malchut, which we achieve now, even though the main thing will be in the future. And so now we go to, this gets connected now in the final paragraph with the idea of Hanukkah, because Hanukkah also emphasizes the flow down below. And through that, we come to the highest heights, because the whole idea of the lamp of Hanukkah is to illuminate the darkness. And that's why the time, the ideal time for lighting the Hanukkah lamp is as the sun is setting and it's becoming dark. And the Talmud, in order to define this, this time of darkness, it says that in the marketplace, there are people called Talmudians. And the Talmudians, when they were a kind of gypsy people who would sell little things, and then when it got really dark, they would go away. They would go home. And so until the feet of the Talmudians cease from the market. Now the word Talmud, this word Talmud, has the same letters as the word Moredet, which means rebellious. So in other words, there's a kind of an extra dimension, a symbolic meaning to the name of this people, that we're talking about rebelliousness, the force of negativity. And so the feet, which means the lowest level, the feet of the Tao, the feet of rebelliousness, which is there in the marketplace, and when that is transformed to holiness, when that ceases, in other words, it ceases to be rebellious and it becomes something positive. And that's the idea of the lights of Hanukkah. And the Hanukkah, in a sense, represents, the lights of Hanukkah represent the temple lights, but they're different to the temple lights. First of all, the temple lights would only be shining in the days of the temple, whereas the lights of Hanukkah shine also in the time of exile. That means they have the power, the light of Hanukkah has the power to illuminate the exile. And this comes down expressed in the verse, Vahavaya Yagia Choshki, and God will illuminate my darkness. So that's it's an extra dimension. And that's the reason why the lights of the temple were only seven, whereas the Hanukkah lights are eight. And that's the difference between the harp that there was in the temple, which had seven strands, but the harp in the time of Mashiach will have eight strands. And there's a rabbinic text by Rabbi Shmuel Shloima Ibn Adra, which explains the greatness of the number eight, because the number eight goes higher than the downchaining of the world, which is represented by the number seven. And from then, from the number eight, you come to the number 10. So, and this is in the service of every individual Jew, man and woman, that through one's attempt, one's service, going down to the lowest level through charity, one comes to the highest level, leading to the inner redemption for each individual, and through this to the general redemption for the Jewish people as a whole, with the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, where also there will be the revival of the dead. And that's the beautiful teaching that we have in this discourse for Hanukkah.
Koyach, Rebbe.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. That was lovely. That's really inspiring.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rebbe Shmuel. And
thank you.
Right.